proper. I'm so glad to have you. I'm so glad to get in touch with your music. So it was, I didn't know you before. Is it, how many records did you make so far? Is it your third or fourth?
Yes,
third?
Number three.
Okay.
Yeah, just came out.
So, your band name is written with a full stop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's not by accident. So, what does this full stop mean?
It's so just like proper period. Like growing up, all of my bandmates will attest to that since we talk very proper, which was like code for like we don't sound like we're black. So a lot of white people growing up would like test us and like tell us we'd like, oh, one of your parents must be white. You talk like real proper. So that's where it comes from. And it just felt like an emphasis, like how Panic at the Disco used to have the exclamation point. The same kind of thing where it was just like proper period. So you know that we mean it, like to emphasize that we talk proper, we dress proper, but we're still a very black band and that doesn't change anything. Kind of the intent.
But how would black people talk normally? I don't understand this.
Exactly, because they expect you, especially down south, they expect you to talk like ghetto or like stereotypical. And it's like my parents were in the military, so I lived all over the world. So I would move to Mississippi, and they would think that I don't sound like a black person, which it was just racism in a you know, small town form, where it's like all the black people that they knew in their small town sounded this way. So they assume everyone everywhere must sound this way, and it just kind of is a thing. If you talk proper, people just assume that you're like one of your parents is white or that you're not from the neighborhood or something like that. It's odd.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought of proper in the meaning of straight, decent, neat or so, and maybe you are or want to be the opposite of this, so it's a provocation.
No.
Maybe.
No, I want to be proper. I definitely yeah, like a big part of this band is our fashion and our aesthetic, and it's definitely like we look like we dress proper, so that's so like we can be proper and also be from like the hood in El Paso or the hood in Mississippi, and that it doesn't matter where you're from, you can be anything. It's kind of the goal.
Your third record is called The Great American Novel. Could I translate it The Great maybe Anti-American Novel or the Anti-American Manifest?
Pretty much. Yeah, it's definitely a take on the genre. So growing up in America, you read like all of the hits. So Catcher in the Rye. Oh my God, what's it called? The Great Gatsby. Just all these like well-off white men that go through crisis. And then with the advent of like the golden age of television, you've got like Mad Men, you've got The Sopranos, obviously Breaking Bad, where it's men that aren't well off per se, but they're just bored. And it just felt kind of just boring and just one dimensional, that was like the pinnacle of American history to a lot of people is gangster movies or rich white men going on drug trips through Tunisia or something. And I just kind of wanted to, because I love literature, it's what started everything for me, and I just want to kind of turn that on its head and see, give people what it could be like from a very different perspective, which is also very American. But when you look at me, you don't think that I would embody America. So I just kind of wanted to turn it on its head.
Is it maybe a kind of American dream, what those works want to represent?
Yeah, the dissection of the American dream. Because for me, especially with military family, it's just like, go to college, if you don't do that, join the military, have 3 kids by 25, do the safe route, and I have face tattoos, and my knuckles are tattooed, and I didn't go to college, I barely made it out of high school. So like, trying to ask what really is the American dream, because I feel like I've made it, I feel like I have it, and it's not anywhere near what my parents would expected, or a lot of my peers that took safer jobs and went the college route would expect. So kind of like a dissection of what is the American dream. What fulfills you? Do you have to do A, B, C to make it to D, or can you just zigzag all across and make your own path?
Would you say that America needs a kind of cultural revolution? How could it look like? I mean, you work on it, don't you?
I think that's the thing, that we're in the midst of one. Clearly, just like with someone like Bernie Sanders getting really close to becoming our president, I don't think even when I was in high school that was even possible. I used to go to all of the rallies. I used to go door to door, and like people were like, ah, communism, huh? And like slam the door. So to see Bernie make it, I graduated high school only like 11 years ago, to see such a drastic change, and just also the drastic change in music and art and like film. And it's like, we're clearly in the midst of it. It's just, I think there's a lot of mean world syndrome where it's like you only focus on the one bad bit of news instead of the 20 good pieces of news. Obviously, the climate crisis is terrifying, but there is a revolution going on and we're in the midst of it. And it's exciting to see where it's going. I'm 31. My little brother's 22. So like that doesn't sound like that big of a gap, but to see how different, how no one in his class cares about if you're gay or bi or if you're trans, and it's just like, why would I care? To see that change, for when I was in high school, being bi was just like, people wanted to literally kill me. So I think that we're in the midst of it. It's just you never see the plan as it's unfolding. You only look back and see all the work that's happened, you know? So it's kind of, we're there, I think.
And you survived so far the nightmare of Donald Trump. We don't know if he comes back, but...
Hopefully not.
So far it's over.
Yeah. Okay. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk a bit about The Great American Novel. It opens with a song called You Good, which means are you good? It's a question.
Yeah.
So are you? Are you good?
Yeah, I mean, so again, in AAVE, which is African American Vernacular English, you good can mean are you thirsty? Are you hungry? Are you tired? Do you need money? Like, you good is such an all-encompassing thing for black people to say to each other. So it's kind of like having it be the story, start the story in the middle, and it'd be like, are you good? And be like, have all these reasons as to why I'm not, was kind of the plan. But I am good now. As a writer, I just really felt it's important to just really have a quick song that really drew people in from the very first line. I think it was one of the first lines I wrote for the record. And I was like, I know that this will set the tone and will let people know that there's insanity coming musically, and also exactly what this story is going to be about was kind of the goal, to get it all down into four short verses. I think the song's like 90 seconds long. So yeah, it's very intentionally the opener, and I think it has been a successful, like, oh wow, this isn't going to be a joke type of moment when people hear the album.
Yeah, but I listened to the lyrics from this opener. I'm not sure if you're really good. So yeah, you sing about you can't afford therapy.
Yeah.
So no matter, I just drink, so I can afford to drink.
Yeah,
that makes me happy, but it's not really good.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on from what side you look.
Yeah, and it's like these are the coping mechanisms that we have as Americans have. I'm 31 and haven't had health insurance in almost a decade, probably. So it's like, yeah, I can't afford therapy. I can't afford to get the meds I need. So it's like, oh yeah, we'll go and get a cheap 40-ounce and get a slice of pizza. And it's like, it's a temporary fix. And then it's like, then you realize that that's all you've been doing is drinking and eating and just not taking care of yourself. And you realize that your temporary fix is actually making the problem worse. So yeah, me as a person, I'm good now. But in the writing of this in the last 4 years, it was just like, oh yeah, the things that I'm doing to cope are not good on the long term. And realizing that part of approaching 30 is like, you're not invincible. You can't just drink your problems away and have to actually like be like, what can I do? Because I can't go to therapy. What can I do? You know?
Are you afraid of the future?
Yeah. I mean, the climate crisis definitely is my biggest like limbo thing, you know, where it's like, I am powerless to stop this. I've kind of just like contented myself with like where things are going. I'm still like organizing and doing the best I can to like get people registered to vote and things like that, but it's like letting go of the fact that there's nothing I can do. It's really in the hands of billionaires that want to decide if they want to be gracious and give us peasants food and water and the right to clean air. But I'm worried, but also just like resolved that I think anything is possible and we can make a turnaround in the fourth quarter, you know.
Yeah, at the moment you have every reason to be afraid.
Yeah.
Because we have the war next door, mm-hmm. in Germany, and you don't know how it will end.
Yeah.
Finger crossed again.
Yeah.
So yeah, climate crisis, what else? Right wing populist, nationalism.
Rolling. Yeah.
So just always in faced by the rollback in society.
Yeah, and it's like, again, I can focus on that, or I can try and focus on the good news that more people are like educated than ever before, and more black people are getting more opportunities of becoming doctors and nurses, important things in society. So I'm choosing to focus on the good, but not be ignorant of the bad.
In the song Chuck and Jive, you sing, I don't want to be American anymore. I mean, okay, I feel you, but what else you want to be? Which nationality exactly. You would prefer? Germany?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I was actually born in Frankfurt. Okay. So yeah, I grew up for the first 3 or so years in Germany, and I've lived on about 3 continents before I was like 15. And it's like, yeah, I don't have any attachment to America. But then the big question is, I'm so clearly American. Where would I go? Where would I belong? Where would I not just find the same problems or just a different form of racism or xenophobia? So it's like the overarching question of my life. I don't want to be here, but where could I go? And the answer still is I have no idea. Luckily, being a touring musician has been great to like look at these places. And now being a touring musician in my 30s, and it's not just a party anymore, I've been like taking note of where I think I could end up. And I don't know yet, but I'm hopeful that one day it will elucidate itself to me.
So there is no El Dorado anywhere. No, even though no. I hope I find Cuba it. Or so.
Yeah, no.
Jamaica.
Hopefully something. My partner and I are going to go on a vacation to Japan soon, and let's see how that goes. But so far, no idea.
Okay. I think it's this song, "You Sing Nothing I Love Less Than to Work Myself to Death." Mm-hmm. So yes. It's a critique again on maybe on your state where you have to work a lot and maybe do several jobs to survive.
Yes.
I mean, America is extremely expensive.
Yes. Yes, I have friends with 3, even 4 jobs, and it's insane. Before music, I was a chef. I went to a culinary academy that was just like a vo-tech school. I got a certificate. So I entered the workforce at like 14 in a kitchen full of 30 and 40-year-olds that thought I was better than them because I got a certificate. So like just from the jump, my first experience working would be like 80-hour weeks. Doing clopins, which is like you open, you close the restaurant, then you come right back in 5 hours and open the restaurant. And I just did that for like 6 years before I got burnt out. So by the time I was 21, I was like, I can't work like this anymore. And I stopped cooking for a long time, which is like, I love cooking more than I love music. And it's kind of just the attitude in America. It's like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, work really, really hard for 60 years so you can enjoy maybe 15 years, if you're lucky, of leisure time. And especially in the music industry, it's not designed for you to make money. That's why I have the line in that same song where it's like, 500,000 streams, how many execs have I helped buy a Bentley? And it's like, we are now approaching 1 million streams total, and we probably maybe got $200, I would think, total. And it's like, that's not because we don't deserve it. It's because they realize that we're okay making that, and there's not a huge uprising against it. So there's this whole thing about, I don't want to work, I don't dream of labor, but I want to do something that pays the bills and that I somewhat enjoy. But music industry, music, food industry, it's just like grinding, going on tour, going in debt to go on tour. And then, but you get this exposure and people come up to you crying and asking for your address, for your autograph, and they take pictures, but you still just have no money. So it's just a weird headspace to be in, and that I'm still doing it at 31 is just kind of normal.
Yeah, and the song Red, Right, Blue, so it's the American flag. Mm-hmm. In the end, you crawl back, so mm-hmm. you can't really say goodbye or...
Yeah. It's the same
separate
question.
From yeah. your country, so it's kind of toxic dependency or so.
Exactly.
Or love and hate relationship.
Yeah, it's the same question of like, I don't want to be here, but where else could I go? Yeah. And it's American ideals and values are so ingrained in me that it's just like, it's an abusive relationship where it's like, I want to leave, but America knows that I can't afford to. I don't have any skills to. I haven't been given the skills to succeed, so I just come back complacently and pay way more money in rent than I need to for a dirty city and bad infrastructure and no healthcare, because what else can I do? It's kind of just like, you know, yeah, you can leave, go for it, and you'll come crawling back. And that's the mentality that I and a lot of my friends have, where we're trapped, but like, at least we're comfortable and trapped, and there's a difference, unfortunately.
I think it's so fascinating on American people that normally they have different roots, so they are all Americans, but mm-hmm. yeah, they come from somewhere, and you as well.
Yes.
Which on about what you sing in Huerta, mm-hmm. I guess. How does this knowledge about your ancestors influence you in your identity and in your music, in your art?
It's been a pretty late thing for me. Whenever I was young and I would ask my dad where we were from, he would just say Florida. and I'd be like, no, where are we from? And he'd be like, Florida, that's all I know. Like, his parents didn't know how old they were. They didn't know when they were born. And that's only one, you know, that's my grandparent. So imagine my great-grandparents, my great-great-grandparents. So at some point I did an ancestry, and I just like discovered that my dad's from West Africa and my mom's from Mexico. And I was just like, I know nothing about either of these places. I took the electives for Spanish in school, of course, but like I was 12. I wasn't taking it seriously. Chef. Now my biggest way has just been learning through food. I can't speak the languages. I don't know any people from those places. My mom's father died before I was born. So it's been like through food I've been learning more. That kind of given me the courage to maybe dress a little more traditional in some of my outfits, and then also writing songs like Huerta, where it's like I don't know this much about myself, but I would like to learn. So it's still very much an early work in progress, but it makes me feel more whole that I'm trying. I would say progress is a zigzag, so I'm glad that I'm on the road to learning, but I know that I have a lot more to learn about my heritage and my family on both sides.
Let's talk a bit about identity again and sexuality. Maybe it's also an important topic for you and on the record. In general, indie rock business is still quite white, male, heterosexual, maybe homophobic, I'm not sure, because I always thought that at least in pop culture, it's a little space for queer people.
Yeah.
So what would you say? So is emo core still the macho thing?
I think it's pretty macho, but I also came from like hardcore and metalcore, which was very macho and very blatantly sexist and racist. So it's like, I think now it's just white dudes that don't know any better because they were just, you know, raised in Vermont or Massachusetts where they just weren't around black people. For me, or queer people, so for me in Mississippi and South Carolina and Georgia, it was white dudes that are in 50% black towns and just still chose not to learn or be better. So I think it's like still straight male driven, but just hapless straight males that like get famous on talking about how hapless they are and how bad they are at most things. And then somehow when allegations come out about them, everyone's surprised. So I think it's still pretty macho, it's still pretty white male driven, but there's definitely a shift. We've been a band for about 6 years, and I remember when our first tour tried to book, it was so hard finding other black indie bands, and now it's, you can throw a stone, and there's five bands now, and we're touring with each other, and we're supporting each other, and we're making sure we're uplifting each other, and letting them know, hey, this place is safe, this place isn't. So it's been a gradual shift, and I think now that we're in the, fifth wave of emo, now there are a lot of trans bands, a lot of non-binary bands, and it's just the norm. And bigger indie scene as a whole, we've yet to see. We've done a few good support slots, and it's been really inviting and supporting, so I'm hoping that it's definitely leveling out.
And how do you fight against this othering and racism? Is it, for example, with corporations with other bands and networking and supporting?
For me, usually it used to be I just would actually fight people. So now that I'm 31 and not as limber, I'm trying. Like I would get into fist fights with the straight white dudes in the metal scenes, and there would be a lot of beef. Back where I lived in Kansas City specifically, but I was 22 and young and ready to fight anyone back then. Now it's just like not letting them push you out of the spaces. Like there's so many shows with mosh pits where I just stand in the front and these, you know, white dudes aren't gonna knock me out of the space. So it's just being vigilant and then letting other bands know, like we network so well with other black bands about like, this place was fine. This promoter seemed a bit off. I don't know if it was racist or not, but now it's just like the magic of the internet. We can communicate faster. We can let people know about sketchy places faster. And it's just been a lot of communication, really, is the most important part.
You mentioned it in the beginning, but again, how was it for you to grow up as a queer young man in such a Christian environment? It's been hard. So.
Oh, so it was so bad.
Is crazy Protestants in America?
Yeah. I mean, crazy everything. So I'm from the South, so we had Southern Baptists. So it would be like church across street from a church, across street from a church, across street from McDonald's. Like that would be every block. But then the deacon would have just the nicest, newest car while he congregated about, you know, doing more for your community and also giving him money. So I've always been atheist. I've always been queer. So I just, a lot of debates. And when that turned, got more heated, a lot of fights and a lot of people trying to out me from their communities and saying I was influenced by the devil or literally possessed. So it was funny in hindsight. But Mississippi specifically was terrible. It's a lot better now. But yeah, in the 90s and aughts, it was just making a choice to other myself, because I could just be quiet and dress normal and talk normal, but I chose not to. So it was being adversarial and choosing your battles, because they also have a lot of guns down there. So it was just choosing which hill to die on, so to speak.
And is it even harder to be queer and black? So I would think so.
Yeah.
Because you have problems in both communities.
Yeah. I never really had a place. Like, my bandmates are my best friends of my entire life, and I'm 31. So yeah, growing up, I went to school, did my work, and then I would like just go see a movie every day, and I would just hang out by myself. I didn't really have very close friends, or I'd tag up behind my older brother Graylin, and I just kind of didn't have a place, because I was just like such an adversarial person that I would rather be alone and ousted from the community than like not be myself. So I had a few acquaintances here and there, but I was mostly like a loner, and it's fine. I'm glad I stuck up for myself, but it made things harder, but it made me me also.
The routine is as well about sex life or life, daily life, normal life, I would say, as a gay man in nowadays in the Western world. So it's about a lot of sex dates, online sex dates. So would you say that sex with, especially with different partners, can this ever become a routine? I asked myself.
It did for me. It was a lot. Without going too into detail, it was just, especially moving to New York from Missouri, where everyone is gorgeous, and I really had to like step up my game. Everyone in New York is gorgeous, yeah. So I just, I moved there at 23, and I was kind of a wallflower shut in, so I kind of like finally got to explore going on dates with men and trans people and non-binary people and not getting ran out of the bar. So I just kind of went wild, and then COVID happened, and it was just kind of like, everyone's inside, stuck inside, bored, we'll put. So it was a good learning experience, like what makes me me, a crash course on it, and being in New York. But I've since leveled out. But it was just, moving to New York, you kind of realize like, oh, I don't know anything. And then you try to play catch up, and that's what ends up happening. Where it's just a routinely thing that kind of gets boring. And then you're like, this is not as cool as James Bond makes it out to be.
Okay, so to have a lot of sex can be boring as well.
Yeah.
The message.
Which sounds so ridiculous, but yeah, it can. It gets old sometimes. Yeah.
But would the opposite be more exciting? So to have a deep and romantic relationship?
I've always been non-monogamous as long as I've been dating people, so I've just already, like, I get those connections with people, and it's nice, but it's still, like, nice to just be like, I'm gonna go on this date with this person, I'll see you later tonight. I've never sought out any romantic relationship I've been in. It just kind of ends up happening, but it is nice when that like surprises you. You're like, oh, I think I like this person, and you don't realize until it's been a minute hanging out with them a lot every day, and you're like, oh yeah, I think I want to date this person. So it's nice to level those two things out.
It's hard work as well.
Yeah.
Song Milk and Honey, I asked myself if this could be about this being unable to commit, to really commit to someone.
So this is actually about not wanting to procreate. Milk and Honey is about not wanting to have kids. My parents had 3 children by the time they were 25. I'm 31 and have no kids, and I have no desire to have children. And it's really about every time I see my parents, like, when are we having a grandchild? Because I have an older brother and a younger brother, and I've been the one that's been in relationships the most. My older and younger brother are just players. They're just always single. So it's always been on me to give them a grandchild. And I finally had the talk where it's like, I'm not having kids. It's not happening. And just to see my 55-year-old mom just shatter. And it's just like, it's such an odd thing to put on someone. It's like, the world's clearly ending. We don't make enough money in my generation. We're never going to stop working. Why would I want to have a child? So Milk and Honey is about that realization. I was like, I'm not fit to be a parent. I'm not going to try.
But you have brothers.
Hopefully, if they want to. My little brother's 22, so I doubt he will be anytime soon. My older brother's 33, so he's got to be up next.
But in the song you sing, I can't be your everything, I thought it would be to a person.
No, sorry. To a baby, to a child.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't think I could love you, I don't think I could be your everything. Like, talking to like a hypothetical child I would have. Like, I am not fit to be your parent. I couldn't do this.
Yeah, maybe let's come to the end. Final song, epilogue. Yeah, I'm good. So it's the answer from the prologue, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yes. It's actually from an episode of Donald Glover's show Atlanta, season 2. And he's like, the exchange is, you good? And he's clearly not okay. And he's like, yeah, I'm good. But he's suffering inside. So it's kind of like a little tongue-in-cheek thing to that. It's one of my favorite shows. Yeah, and then try to end the album on a whimper instead of a bang intentionally.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy because everybody's asking you, are you good, are you good? And everybody is saying, yes, 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 I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. But
exactly.
You don't know if it's true.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
And nobody would ever say, no, I'm not good. No,
yeah.
I'm really good.
Exactly. Like, you don't know. You don't ever want to feel like a burden to your family, to your friends. So you kind of just say, yeah, I'm good, and you suck it up, and you just keep doing some stupid behaviors and go into a cycle. So I kind of wanted to like play off that, especially with the lyrics of the song, where it's just like, I'm just so tired and I'm just so worn down and I don't know why I'm trying at all. And just to really double down, if you good is the call, this is the response to that. It's kind of the vibe. And just the whole thesis of the album is that it's just being black and queer after 3 decades of fighting. I'm expected to fight for 50 more and keep a brave face on, and it's just like, I'm just too tired to even try.
Okay, I wish you all the best for your fight, Eric.
Thank you.
I think you will win.
I hope so. I'm feeling very, very positive about it.
And have a good show tonight at the Slow Club.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.